Advaita Machutam Ananam Anantarupam Adhyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha Vede Shudurlavam Adurlavam Atma Bhakto Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So we are going through the word for word of the verse and describing the different characteristics of Krishna that are given in this definition of God by Lord Brahma. In the verse itself, we also mentioned that if you were to give a theme to this verse, we would say that Krishna is the Lord of contradictions. And then each of these words, you know, he says he's the, I think we got up to the Rupam we were discussing. That we say Krishna is, he has unlimited forms, but he has one form. Just like they say, Prabhupada used the analogy that there may be many, many candles lit up, like just like in the, churches or something, they light so many candles, or in South India they light deepam in the temples. In Balaji they have one place where they have 1,008 ghee lamps, and they light them. It takes so long to light them, several people light them. It's some kind of ritual they do for the worship of Balaji. So originally there's one candle that's lit, and then all the other ones are lit from that. They light one, and then from the other ones they light. So Prabhupada, the acharyas use this analogy to show there's one form, and then all the unlimited forms come from that form, and they're similar in quality. That's why we say Vishnu Tattva. But then there's some differences also, and that's explained Nectar Devotion, how Vishnu, he has 93% of the qualities of Krishna, right? This is 93, and then 89 is the demigods. How does it go? 84 is the demigods, and 79 is the living entities. You ever read that? Something like that. Like the living entities, that's us, the jivas, we can exhibit to some extent 79% of the qualities of God. So we may consider how much percentage of the qualities of God we're exhibiting right now. Maybe not 79%. And then Lord Brahma and Shiva, they exhibit up to 84%. And then Narayan is 93% and Krishna is 100%. And those 7% differences that we've been discussing is Krishna's Lila Madhurya, Vena Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya. So, the Lord of Contradictions, this is Krishna's transcendental nature. Probably one of the main points about hearing about Krishna and different aspects of the personality of Krishna, the charm of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, the energies of Krishna, all these different aspects of God, is that somehow we become captured, we become enchanted, we become attracted to something or other. In the beginning, of course, many devotees, they're attracted and captured by, prasadam. it works pretty well in different countries. It seems to be a universal trap around the different countries of the world. So that's just one aspect of Krishna. So hearing about, just like this is his nature, this is Krishna's nature, that he has one original form, but he has ananta rupam, and then the other phrase that's used here, that he's purana purusham, in other words, like Lord Brahma basically is saying like this, he's very fat and he's very thin. He's very tall and he's very short. He's very fast and he's very slow. He's very poor and he's very rich. He's very beautiful and he's very ugly. What do you describe? What is this? This is all. How can someone be rich and poor, and fast and slow, and fat and thin and beautiful? So the same thing he's doing. He said he's Purana Purusham. Then he's, which means Purusha means person. Then Purana means old. Like we have the Puranas. So he's the oldest person. But then he's Navayovanam. And Yovana means a youth. He's only 15. And Nava means Nitya. He's always youthful. So how is this possible? Well, that's possible because he's God and we're not. And no one else can, no one equal to him or above him. Asam Urdhva. Asam, no one equal to him, and Urdhva, no one is above God. So this is some of his special nature. And of course, what philosophy is all about is trying to explain and understand all these differences. And then there's so many pastimes cited to support these philosophical points. So in this relationship with Puranam Purusham is that when Krishna appeared on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was approximately 90 years old, and he had grandchildren at that time. Because he had 10 sons and one daughter by all of his 16,000 queens. And like Rukmini's and Krishna's son was Pradyumna. Then Pradyumna had a son named Aniruddha, I believe. So Aniruddha was a grandson of Krishna, and Krishna even went to fight on behalf of his grandson. And the story of Usha and Aniruddha in the Krishna book. So that's the nature. Sometimes grandfathers have to fight for their grandsons and different family quarrels and whatnot. So this is kind of like an inter-family quarrel between Usha's Abanasura, who's the father of Usha, and the grandfather of Aniruddha. And Pradyumna was also there. Also, the father came to his rescue. His son got himself in a little trouble. Sometimes sons and daughters get themselves in trouble, and fathers and grandfathers have to bail them out. It's very, very classic story. It's amazing to think that 5,000 years ago, I think they were doing the same thing we're doing now. You know, because Aniruddha was misbehaving in one sense. Put it mildly. So when Krishna was on the battlefield, he had grandchildren, but when they describe his appearance on the battlefield, the kind of phrases they use is the same thing, Navayovanam, that he appeared like 16, whereas Bhishma Dev, who is not God, he appeared like he was grandfather, Pitamaha, and he had long gray beard and long gray hair, and you know, he was like 110 years old or something, 200, I don't know, it's pretty old. So Krishna was quite old also, but he looked like a young boy. So this is the Lord of Contradictions. So this is the points that Brahma is making in the verse. And then Jiva Goswami and other acharyas discussing this same kind of enigma, or you could say puzzle, about the absolute truth. Because some people get turned off by this. They say the absolute truth or God should be consistent. He should be the Lord of consistencies. And he should be the Lord of steadiness and the Lord of regulation. But we see Krishna's the most unregulated person in the planet. And we have to follow all these regulations to attain the most unregulated person. That's a contradiction. Of course, you follow regulations to come to the point of spontaneity or actual purity where you have some affection. And then you can become a little unregulated like Krishna. And an example is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. His whole life he was so regulated, so much vidya that he followed as an acharya, teaching by his example, and as a Brahmin, Bhattacharya. And he would get up at a certain time and bathe in a certain time and face a certain direction, and you know, so much clean clothes and mudras before you eat and everything, and achman, and you know, turning different directions and offering food to the different directions. I mean, it's a whole ritual just to take a, you know, samosa. We don't really think about it. We just go to, you know, the snack shop or something in Haribo, and or if you're not even in Vrindavan, then you say Sri Vishnu or something, or whatever. Whoever your Ishtadeva is at the time, you know, Haribo, Jai Jagannath, or, you know, Om Tat Sat or something. So, and then all of a sudden, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to Jagannath Mahaprasadam. He says, "Hey, Sarva, check it out. Jai Jagannath." And he says, "Oh." And then he was like a little bit tied up in a knot by all his years and years of regulated habit and practice. So his mind just went in 1,000 directions. Oh, first I have to wash my hands. Oh, first I have to do my basins. First I have to do stutis, morning stutis. First I have to offer ablution to the sun. Then I have to worship the Ashwat tree. Then I have to do Parikrama of the 10 directions. You know, he's like, all this stuff's going through his head. Then he just looked at Lord Chaitanya leaning over his bed, you know, at 3:30 in the morning. It's not even, you know, you're not even supposed to eat before sunrise. And there's so many millions of rules. And he knew them all and followed them all for like 70 years or however old he was at that time. And he just looked at Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said, "I brought Mahaprasad." And he said, "Jai Jagannath," and he just ate the prasadam. So he had come by, you know, the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had come to this spontaneous platform of attraction to Krishna and Jagannath. And so that's the whole point of sadhana bhakti, that Vaidhi sadhana has its two aspects, and one aspect of it is certainly rules and regulations, regulated life. But the Acharyas, they have to defend this little boy known as Shyamasundara Krishna, because he really doesn't fit the standard definition of God that most people, you could say, transpose on the conception of God itself, or himself. What is God? That he must be the most regulated, he must be very standardized, just like a Ford Motor Company or something. You know, he must be very standardized, and like an assembly, and he has to walk in a certain way, and sit in a certain way, but he doesn't. And so then the Acharyas, they take this up and they discuss this a lot, you know, how the contradictions in Krishna. Just like in this verse, I didn't finish the other part. He says, "Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakto." He says that durlabh, love means lobh, lobh means kam krodh lobh, means greed or to attain, and dur means difficult or far, long way, far away. Durlabh. Durlabham means he's difficult to attain, he's far away. So he says that he's durlabham, he's far away, vedeshu durlabham, but adurlabham atmabhakto. So he says he's durlabham and then he's adurlabham. He's very far away and he's very difficult to attain by the Vedas, but he's not difficult to attain by the atmabhakto. So that's another contradiction. He's hard to attain. No, he's easy to attain. Atma Bhakta. Of course, that's not easy either. But at least it's shown that this opposite path can actually attain the unattainable. So Krishna, although he's unattainable by the Vedas, he can be attainable by devotion. Atma Bhakta. One whose Atma is suffused with bhakti. The Atma, of course, Prabhupada defines the Atma as the mind, body, and senses. These are the full explanations of Atma. There's the soul, the Atma, there's the body, the senses, the mind. This is all considered to be under the definition of Atma. So when those are full of devotion, then you attract Krishna. He sits there. So they give some different points to kind of explain how it all comes about. His first of all, because people say, well, how is it possible? How does he do it? How does Krishna display all these contradictions? Because one thing is that some people, many people that we may meet, they have a lot of contradictions in themselves. So Krishna displays different contradictions, that he's the oldest, he's Purana Purusham. So that's why when the Christians who don't, they don't have this, they can't grasp or understand this idea, when they say God is the oldest person, then when they depict God, he's always some guy with a long gray beard. He's really old, you know, he has long, you know, gray beard, and he's an old man, because he's the oldest person, so he must be very, you know, like an old person we see in this world. But when we show God, I remember when we were just turning back to Godhead, there was a picture of Govinda on the cover in 75 or so, and I passed it out, and he was sitting on a rock, and there was some little animal next to him, a monkey or something. And you give it to someone, and they say, "Oh, who's this girl on the cover of the magazine?" "That's not a girl, that's Krishna. That's God." "God, looks like some girl with long hair because of old paintings." So our depiction of God or Krishna is not some old man with a gray beard, but some extraordinarily attractive person that is like, beautiful as a woman and handsome as a man, all in one. So the Acharyas, the Christians, they can't understand that, or they say sometimes in their writings, they say, well, God is personal, he's a person, but he's also impersonal. That this world goes on by his energies, and that's impersonal. So then sometimes they depict God on these little tracts, like the Jehovah's Witnesses or something, some group like that. They'll show a picture of God. Well, God's the king, he's the king of heaven, and he's the boss and the controller. So they show God sitting on a big throne, because kings sit on a big throne. So he's sitting on a big seat. But because he's impersonal, they don't draw any feet, they draw a little circle for his face. It's some kind of person, but not a very defined person. There's some kind of like stick figure sitting on a throne with a circle, like a lollipop face. You know, a circle for a face with no nose and no eyes and no ears. And that sounds a lot like our friends down the road, you know, the Tripadi Bhavas, you know, the Mayavadis. that, you know, they say that God has no eyes and no ears and no nose, and, you know, he's a Rupam and Nirgun and all these things. So that's not quite it either. So then the Acharyas are, we explain, no, God has features, he has a form, he has a body, he has eyes and nose and ears, as we do also, but they're spiritual, they're transcendental. They're just like this body is made of things from this world, material things. And when it's analyzed chemically, they say that the human body is 75% water, as is this, I think, whole planet is something like that also, 75% oceans and 25% continents and land. So this body, by weight, by mass, is mostly water, although you think it's, you know, maybe a little too fat. A little fatter than you want it to be, or whatever. But it's actually, it's mostly water. Of course, fat is also water in one sense. It's broken down to water. So our body is made of that. It's made of earth and water and fire and air and ether and all these things. So we accept this is reality. This is made of objects of this world. This world has earth in it and fire and water and air and gas and all these things. And my body has all these things. So these objects that are outside are within me, and my body's made of that. But Krishna, he also has a body, but his body is made of the building blocks and the objects of the spiritual world. This Chintamani or this Chit Shakti, spiritual energy. Just like here we have material energy with different variations and variegatedness and variety. So in the spiritual world there's variety. There's a bliss potency, the Ladini Shakti, and there's an existence and eternality potency. And there's the potency of unlimited knowledge and cognizance. So you mix all these up together and they manifest in a form, a transcendental form, which is made of Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Eternal form, blissful form, all-knowing form. So that's God. That's the definition the Christians give of God. Omnipotent. He's omnipotent, all-powerful. He's omniscient, right? All science. He knows everything. Omniscience. He's omniscient, omnipotent. And what's the other? There's some other one. Omnipresent. He's omnipresent. He's present everywhere. Outside, inside. He's in the sky. He's in the water. He's in our heart. He's in the atom. God is everywhere. So he has a body, but it's not like our body. So all these kind of contradictions in God, although in us, and we as conditioned souls, limited souls, we are subjected to hypocrisy and saying one thing and doing another thing, and it results, this kind of duality within ourselves, we have this kind of dualistic nature, the body and the mind, or the mind versus the soul, or the consciousness versus the, you know, the senses, or all different kinds of dualities we exist in. And they create discord. These dualities that we have, they create discord, disharmony, fighting, clashes, struggles within ourselves, a struggle between the senses and the consciousness or the conscience. We have a conscience which may be due to our training or due to our some scars from last life. We may be very moral and very upright and very pure-hearted by conscience, but then our senses and our body, due to its youthful age, being young and passionate, we feel driven by the desires of lust and anger and greed. So therefore in the Bible, the Christians coin a phrase like this. They say, the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. You heard this expression? So they say, the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. In other words, my conscience, my soul, me, the Atma, the life of this body, the experiencer, the witnesser, the owner, the possessor, the driver, he's really a good guy, and you know, he really wants to do the right thing and be honest and pure. But my senses and the body, the flesh of this body, these indriya, the panch indriya, they're really rascal and really nonsense. So what we find in all of our different contradictions, we find a lot of discord, disharmony, conflict, struggle, and it's not very sweet. It's rather bitter. Bitter struggle. Life is bitter. But when you examine Krishna and all the various contradictions, like, you know, Purana Purusham, he's the oldest, Navayovanam, he's the youngest, Durlabham, or Vedeshya Durlabham, he can't be understood by the Vedas, but he's easily attainable by Atma Bhakta, by the devotee. And then he's Adyam, he's unborn, but he's born from Mother Yashoda. He has one form, original form, but he has Anantarupa, unlimited forms. It's not discord, it's not a struggle, it's completely harmonious. It's a wonderful symphony of harmony to see all these contradictions. So the Acharyas say that how Krishna does this, how he can be the oldest of the oldest, and at the same time maintain eternal youth, because everyone can agree around the world as they go through different phases of life, from birth to growth, and, well, anyway, just say from birth to youth to old age and death, they can appreciate, well, what's the best time of life? Well, the best time of life is certainly not babyhood, and it's not really old age, but it's in the middle somewhere, you know, in the middle there, when you're like 15 to 25 or something. That's when everything is kind of strong and works pretty well, and you're healthy and happy and effulgent and all those things. So most people will say that they want to remain, you know, sweet 16. You know, sweet 16 or 15. So that's Krishna. There he is, eternally standing there in threefold bending form with his head tilted in a certain way and looking over his top of his flute with his eyebrows dancing and his fingers dancing in such a... And then as the music comes out of his flute and it makes the hearts of the jivas dance. So Prema's dancing and the jivas dancing and everyone's dancing. That's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prema makes Krishna dance and makes Radha dance. And then they make Prema dance itself. So this is, everyone will agree, no matter what culture you're from, that no one wants to get old. So Krishna is that beautiful youth. So how he does all these things, how he synthesizes all these contradictions, how he harmonizes all these things, is through his special power called Achintya Shakti. It's inconceivable to us. Prabhupada said on some tapes, he said, every living entity has some Achintya Shakti. Achintya means achint. It's inconceivable. Just like there's a little lizard, tick-tick, he crawls up the wall. Then he goes up on the ceiling. And he stands there, and he goes to sleep or spends a couple days up there on the ceiling, upside down. Can you do that? I mean, we make cartoons about it, Spider-Man and, you know, all kinds of far-out kids' comics and stuff. So that's just the inventions of mad, you know, cartoonists after watching animals in their rooms and stuff. It's the man who's like a spider or something. You know, they watch a spider and he makes a web from his body. So then there's a man like a Spider-Man who has a thing he throws. You know, it's just kind of like science fiction. But at any rate, it's not science fiction. It's reality that he has that power to go to sleep up there for a few days upside down, and we can't even walk up the wall, what to speak of, you know, stand upside down on the ceiling. So that's inconceivable how he does it. Then, of course, the scientists, they'll take that little guy into the laboratory and cut him up in 100 pieces. And that's not very sweet, but that's what they do. And they analyze, oh, no, you have to understand, he has little suction cups, you know, like you use in your toilet, you know, that kind of thing. choot, choot. So he has these kind of things. He has six of them under each foot. And and he goes under there and he goes choot choot, and he has a built-in hydraulic system which releases the vacuum pressure inside the suction cup so that he can walk and go very fast. Now they have it all figured out, and they think they're very intelligent, but it still gets down to the bottom line: can you do it? Can you make another one that can do it? Well, no. But we can try to tell you what it's all about. So Krishna makes so many of them that can walk on the ceiling. So that's inconceivable power. And then Prabhupada would cite the example of the fly. The fly, the scientists, they're so proud of their supersonic transport plane, airplanes, or their missiles, or their different kinds of flying vehicles. But Prabhupada said, look at the little fly. The little fly is so amazing. He can go, he gets standing there, and he just fly, change direction so fast, land, go so fast. They can't make a plane like that. But what to speak, you go to the banks of the Jamuna. So it's inconceivable how such a little, you know, he's a complete, you know, 747, and he's only this big. As big as your pencil eraser. But he's complete, you know, supersonic transport. And then he can make other transports also. And you never see any 747 laying eggs in the sky. You know, it doesn't work like that. If you go to the banks of Jamuna, you'll see one bird. He's like dive bomber, helicopter, and submarine all in one. And he's pretty attractive too. And he's quiet. No air pollution. Well, sometimes. You have to be careful where you walk. But basically, no air pollution, and very colorful. And not only that, have you ever heard an airplane that sings? Nice song. Have you ever heard of a helicopter that, you know, that when it's sitting at the airport, not going anywhere? You know, hey, that's interesting. I mean, they have music on board, and we try to imitate the bird. You know, we make music inside the jet plane. You know, you put, you know, different channels or whatever. So they're trying to make the birds, you know, the planes sing. But the birds, they sing. So this one little bird, little black and white, you know, fisher type bird. He goes up like this, and he hovers above the water about 15 meters, maybe 20 meters, maybe 15 meters at least. Completely like a Sierkowski, you know, Russian, you know, helicopter or something like that, whatever it's called. He's just staying there like that. Not going anywhere. He's checking out the scene with his radar. He's saying, where's the lunch? You know, I'm looking for, he wants to eat one fish. Then he sees one fish, some prasad, you know, from Jamuna. And then, he's just there like that, and immediately dives straight down. And then he catches that fish, and he comes up like that, and all he gets is like a little bit of his tail feather wet. And then he goes straight up, and then flies off to his, you know, tree somewhere and has his lunch. But there's impossible they could ever make a helicopter that can like hover like that and dive straight down full speed, then get to the ground, you know, and then pull out and go straight up again. I mean, they try. They have different kinds of military craft that go up and down and airplanes that go up and fly and all that kind of stuff. But they can't ever do it. So they can imitate to some extent, but they can never duplicate it. So there's so many examples of inconceivable. And I guess the classic one is the story of Narada Muni and the cobbler. Narada Muni and the cobbler and the Brahmin. This is an old story about this Achinti Shakti, the Lord, and how one who has faith, Shraddha, one who has belief or faith in God, then it's not too difficult for them to understand, see the harmony in everything that God has done and his creation and in his pastimes and activities and his own qualities and nature. It's completely harmonious, and it's all done by his Achinti Shakti, which he shows in so many ways. But to really appreciate that and to actually have the ability to see how it all fits together, it's all very harmonious. That's why some acharyas, when they preach, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he used to say that everything in our environment is friendly. So our environment, the environment that we live in, is external and internal. Internal is the mental environment. The mental environment, the karmic kshetra that we're moving on, the field of karma, the field of actions that we're moving on, is our individual karmic kshetra. So that's our internal field, which of course overlaps into this world. But it includes the mental field, the mana kshetra. But then there's the external environment, which is just the people, our relatives, friends, society, business, associates, countries, land, animals, living entities, nature, right? All those kind of adiatmika, adikalesha, all these things. So he was explaining that actually our internal and external environment is all friendly. No friendly? Amicable. It's all positive. It's all pushing us towards the center. The center point of our inner self and our outer self, and the central point of this world, this outer environment, is God. Everything comes from God, and everything goes to God, and everything is maintained and moves around God. He is the center point, like the axle of a wheel. Everything goes around that center point. So he explained he didn't see anything. Everything was in harmony. Everything's moving nicely, like we have the expression, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of God. So not only does he sanction everything, but he sanctions it and executes it in a very harmonious way. There's, in other words, nothing unfavorable. There's nothing unfavorable. There's nothing unfriendly. There's no opposition. There's no enemies. That is all duality that we create ourselves. Because if we see the loving hand of God, if we see the loving hand of God and his expert harmonious expression in our inner and outer environment, then we'll never be so much bewildered. and our execution of life's duties and life's activities, in our case, which is service of God and perfection and liberation of the soul from the body. So this is nicely illustrated in the story of the cobbler, Narada Muni and the cobbler. The show, Krishna's Achintya Shakti, so we've heard the story a few times, but it applies in this discussion. How Krishna does so many wonderful and inconceivable things, and they all work very harmoniously and nicely together. So Narada Muni, he was traveling and he visited one Brahmin, and he said, "I'm going to Vaikuntha to see my Lord Narayan, my Ishta." His Ishtadev, Lord Narayan. "And anything you want for from Vaikuntha, or you want me to ask him anything? Like when you go to the city, you say, do you want anything from Delhi? I'm going to Delhi, Rupa, you want something?" And so Narada said, "I'm going to see Narayan, should I ask him anything?" He said, "Yes, please ask him when I'm getting liberated. When I'm getting out of here." That's a pretty important question. It's funny because when most people go to astrologers, when they go to astrology school to study to be astrologers, my one friend was telling me, he said most 99% of the people, when they come for questions to an astrologer, they ask questions about marriage, money, and their job. Kind of the same, they're related. He said, so when... if you want to like kind of catch somebody's faith, this is kind of psychology they train the astrologers to increase faith. You know, it's called client psychology. So it's like doctors. I went to medical school, so we had all these psychology courses, how to deal with patients. And even though the guy's going to die tomorrow, you have to make him feel like he's going to live forever. Because, you know, you want him to pay his medical bills and, you know, buy your latest prescription. You know, he's going to die tomorrow, so what does it matter whether you give him $10,000 prescription today? But if he buys the medicines from your brother's shop down the street or your shop, then you make some money. So he comes in, he's going to die tomorrow. But he says, "Oh, look, you need this and this and this." The guy says, "God, it's $500. "No, don't, you know, no, this is important. You know, you need this. This will keep you going." So he puts the $500 down, he buys the medicine. Next morning, he's dead. Anyway, you got your $500, you know. So they teach all these things in psychology, right? How to make the patient feel happy and he's going to live forever. And so now a person comes to an astrologer. And he says, "Oh, you know, I have some questions. Oh, yeah, you have some questions about marriage, right?" And they go, "Yeah, how do you know?" So in the same way, a spiritualist or a seeker of God or a religious person, what's on his mind, if he's halfway sincere, of course these may also be necessary questions about those things, ashram or economic position, economic, you know, situation. But usually he asks some question like, "Well, when am I getting liberated?" Because that's also indicated in your chart. If you have, at least to some extent, they can say yes. Because it's a whole science of calculation, how the different houses of the chart and planets are placed in different houses, and they indicate that this will be your last life, or you'll take your planets the next life, you'll move to one, you know, they say one more life or two more lives. It's, to some extent, it is indicated it's in your chart. So it was appropriate that the Brahmin asked, "When will I get liberated?" So then he went to the cobbler, you know, the shoemaker, and he said, you know, "Narada Muni said, I'm going to Narayan, anything you'd like to know?" He wanted to know when he was getting liberated also. So Narada Muni went to see Narayan, 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 Namo Narayan, Namo Narayan. So he saw Narayan, and he said, "My Lord, I met some of your, couple of your devotees, and they have some requests, they have some questions." And the one Brahmin from the, you know, Vrindavan, one of the Pakka Goswami Brahmins from the Vrindavan, he wanted to know when he's getting liberated. And so, "Oh yes, I know that Brahmin. Well, when you see him, you say that he'll be liberated in 3 births. Watch up. Okay. And then, oh yeah, there's one other cobbler. He sits out in front of ISKCON, Krishna Balaram Temple. Fixes all the, you know, the Adidas and Puma shoes of all the Western devotees." And, "Oh yeah, yeah, I know that one. He takes the Food for Life Khichdi twice a day." Yeah, yeah. And he goes to even a kirtan, and he's real. He's nice. Yeah. You tell him that this is his last life, because actually he was my great devotee in last life, but he did some problem, so he got some curse to be cobbler and to serve all the videshis and stuff. But this is his last life. So you tell him that this is his last life. So, okay. So then he went, Narada said, well, what should I tell them? Any other news I should tell them, you know, what you're doing? Oh yeah, just tell them that I was, when you see them, tell them that I was taking an elephant. I was taking an elephant and I was pulling him through the eye of a needle. I was threading him through the, like you take a piece of thread and put it through the needle and then you sew. So I was pulling an elephant through the eye of a needle, through the hole of the needle. All right, no problem. So he went back and he saw the Brahmin. He said, oh, Jai Ho, Swagatam, Goswamiji, Namaskar. He said, so I saw Narayan. And, yes, what did he say? He said, you'll get liberated in 3 births. He said, what? What? How is it possible? I'm Chaturvedi, I'm Shastra Shiromani, I'm Upadhyaya, I'm so many things. How is it possible? And this is very distressful news for me. 3 more births. I'm the famous Goswami here, and I have so much money and everything. How is it possible? So then he said, yes, you want to know what the Lord was doing? Yeah, yeah. He was kind of disheartened by that time. He said, yeah, what was he doing? Oh, Vishnu was taking an elephant and he was pulling him through the eye of a needle. And then the Goswami Brahmin said, what? Hey, Narada Muni, I think you've been, you know, out in the sun too long. You know, you've been out too close to the sun when you're playing your veena. You went a little, you know, speaking a little delirious, a little crazy. It's not possible. How can a huge elephant go through a little eye of a needle? It's impossible. Anyway. Jairadi. So Narada goes to the cobbler, and then he says the cobbler was very happy to see him, and even the cobbler was such a simple person. When Narada Muni came there, he said, oh, Narada, you're back. How is my Lord? How is he feeling? He was very much inquiring, you know, from the Lord's side. How is the Lord? Did he speak to you? He wasn't immediately thinking of his business. Whereas the Goswami immediately was like, hey, you know, now what did he say? The question. When am I? So the cobbler is saying, "How is my Lord? What is he doing? What did you see up there? I'm so curious about everything up there." He said, "Oh, he's very fine. And I have some good news for you, that you won't be fixing shoes next life, because Lord Narayan said you're getting liberated in this life. This is this is it. Your last birth." He said, "Oh, Jai Radhe, Haribo, Jai." Namo Narayan. So then he said, well, what was the Lord doing? He said, oh, he was sitting in the backyard and he was taking an elephant. He was threading him through the eye of a needle. And then the cobbler, the simple cobbler, shoemaker, he said, oh, that's fantastic. That's really great. Isn't it amazing? Just see what our Lord can do. He can do anything. There's nothing impossible for him. He was like practically crying in happiness to hear that his Lord was having such a wonderful pastime in his backyard, playing with an elephant and putting him through a needle. And Narada Muni was impressed by the simplicity and the utter faith, the complete faith of this cobbler. He said, why, you know, you believe that? Narada Muni said, you believe that? Yes, certainly, of course. Why not? Why should I disbelieve it? See, I'm sitting under this banyan tree by the gate here. You know, this by the gate of the temple. I've been sitting here for years. Now, you know, in this tree, what happens is little figs are there, and these little fruits fall off, and inside that fruit there's a little seed. A little tiny seed, it's like as big as a pencil point. But inside that seed, in that banyan bija, there's a huge tree, and so many branches, and so many leaves, and so many fruits. It's all packed up inside of that little tiny seed. So anybody that can put a huge banyan tree inside this tiny seed, what's the problem for putting an elephant through the eye of a needle? So you can see the cobbler, due to his shraddha, he had buddhi. He actually, even though a Brahmin by birth is supposed to have buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence, right? He's supposed to be intelligent and have perception. But due to his, you know, different, you know, situations, his faith was diluted. So So his faith wasn't so strong and his intelligence wasn't so strong. But the simple Brahmin had pure faith. And because of his faith, which was based on reason also, it was reasonable, he could understand and actually believe the Achintya Shakti of the Lord, the inconceivable potency of the Lord. So this analogy is given also in the Vedas, this story of the cobbler about the faith. Because faith, as they say in the Bible, faith moves mountains. Right? I think there's a phrase like that. So in the Rupa Goswami is discussing this. All the great acharyas, all the great spiritual teachers in our line, they address this philosophical point. The seeming contradictions in God. That God is supposed to be the exemplar of morality and dharma and religion. But then we see he comes here and he runs around with the cowherd girls that are married to other people. So that seems highly immoral. That he actually, one of his rasas, one of the spiritual flavors of spiritual pleasure that he tastes and relishes is called parakiya bhav. Parakiya bhav means the love of a paramour with her lover. Of course, we have that in this world, that a married man or married woman, one may have an illicit lover or an outside lover. That's called paramour. So, as above, so below. So that's also there in God. He also has paramours. He has his wives, he has queens also. In Dwarka he has wives, Rukmini, Chandra, Rukmini, Satyabhama, Mitravinda, Kalindi, Satya, etc. So, but he also has his paramours. When of course for him it's not really paramour, but he goes, it is paramour because he goes with the wives of others. So that seems to be a contradiction. There's so many laws of God in the Bible and Old Testament and Muhammad and laws of Muhammad, and everywhere there's laws about marriage and polygamy and all these things. So it's not considered religious. It's not considered proper or moral for a man to go around with, 1,000 wives of other husbands. What to speak of 16,000 wives of other husbands. And you say he's God? What are you talking about? He sounds like the biggest, baddest playboy that ever hit the scene, so to speak. But of course, and he is, no doubt. He's the biggest, and he's the baddest, and he's the best. That's why he's God. At any rate, they deal with all these things. So Rupa Goswami in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, he discusses this little point. He quotes one verse from Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 4, verse 16. Karman yani hasya bhavo bhavasyate durgashrayotari bhayat palayanam kalatmano yat pramara yut ashrama swatmanate kriditi dir vidvam iha. My Lord, even the learned sages, great rishis, saintly persons and sages, they become disturbed in their intelligence when they see your greatness engages in fruitive work, although you are free from all desires, that you take birth, although you are unborn, and that you flee out of fear of the enemy, and you take shelter in the fort, although you are the controller of invincible time, and that you enjoy householder life surrounded by many women, although you enjoy in yourself alone. Then he comments, Rupa Goswami says, contradictions seen in the pastimes of Krishna's potencies are his inconceivable opulence. They decorate him, they are not defects. So these are considered, so-called contradictions are not defects. When we see contradictions, and like the classic example of contradictions is politicians. Politicians will promise everything and say so many things, and then they get in office and they cheat and steal and lie and they just don't do anything that they promise to do, and they do just the opposite. So these are certainly defects. They aren't decorations of their character. They aren't things to be praised. They're things to be condemned. And sometimes their misbehavior becomes so appalling and so despicable that the people themselves, they kick out that politician, or they drag him down, or they impeach him, or they take him to court, or they, like the president of America, he, I don't know what all the details, but he grabbed a servant lady and threw her in a closet or something like that. I don't know details. Some kind of debauchery And then that's certainly a defect in the president of America, that he's just, you know, grabbing some sweeper lady and having an affair with her. And but, you know, nowadays, Kali Yuga, that's considered a decoration. You know, it's like they make movies about it or something, and he gets elected to a second term. Oh, wow, he's a good president. He's our man. As Thetsa Prabhupada said in his books, he said that when you have a society of cats and dogs, and then they want to elect the leader, well, they'll elect the biggest, the most ferocious dog will be the king of the pack. The one who's most dogly, will get the post of the leader of the dogs. So when the whole society has gone to the dogs and cats, and then all the people are like doggish and catish, then they'll elect the biggest dog to be the leader. So if you exhibit all kinds of dogly qualities, hey, he's our man, you know, I vote for him. But virtue, we used to elect people on the basis of virtue and morality and kindness and generosity. Like the Bhagavad Gita explains, the characteristics of a Kshatriya: heroism, courage in battle, generosity, forgiveness. There's different qualities of a Kshatriya. So now, the Kshatriya is supposed to be the president or prime minister, but now heroism, they run away when there's a battle. When there's a war with Vietnam, they send all the kids over there and they sit tightly on the golf course, you know, playing golf in North Carolina, where all the young kids are getting blown up on the battlefield. So that's not a very courageous president. The president of America is supposed to be the commander-in-chief of the army. So the country goes to war and he goes and plays golf. He's playing golf and going sport fishing. By the flowers of the country, the youth of the country are getting slaughtered in mass in some foreign country. This is a modern day country. At any rate, Krishna, his contradictions, they're actually decorations. They ornament him and they beautify him and they increase his attraction, they increase his beauty, and they fluff out or they fulfill the fullest definition of God. That if you only define God in very limited terms, with length, width, and depth, and then that's as much as you can say, then that's not much of a God. Your God should have unlimited depth, and unlimited ananta rupam and ananta guna, unlimited qualities and forms. So Krishna, he meets that with his so many qualities. You know, he's big and he's small, and he's ugly and he's beautiful, and he's rich and he's poor, and you know, that's what, but sages, even great sages, the munis and gyanis and yogis, they get bewildered. Why? Because they don't have that shraddha. They don't have that faith to actually accept that. So when they read about Krishna, that he's breaking into the houses of the neighbors and stealing butter, or you know, he is that God, everyone's afraid of God, and they're afraid, and God is represented by different factors, by the time factor and by death. Death is one of the energies or realities that are existing in this creation by God. In this plane of existence, death is a reality. But in the spiritual world, there's no such thing as death. So that's created here by God. So they see that Krishna, everyone's afraid of death, everyone's afraid of God and his energies. But then God's running away from his mother. His mother takes a stick and says, "You rascal! You broke my yogurt pot and threw it all over the floor. I'm gonna catch you." And he's running away like an ordinary frightened little boy. And he's crying, and eye makeup's going down his face, and his heart's going fat, pop, 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 pop. You know, it's like a little, you know, motorbike. And, you know, and his mother, and he's like looking over his shoulder, you know, and his tear, you know, fearful eyes. And then, you know, and then he's crying, don't hit me. And then it's like that. So he's displaying all the ordinary human characteristics of a frightened little boy. But this is not a defect in God's personality. Rather, this is an ornament that he has all these different aspects, and he shows the omnipotent, majestic, royal, regal aspect of the supreme God. You know, God, like they define God as the generator, the operator, the destroyer. God. So he has that aspect, but then he has this sweet little lovable aspect of this little boy that you can rock in your arms, and you can be his mother if you choose to, and you can be his friend, and you can wrestle with him and throw him on the ground. Then you tell him, "Hey, look, you know, I defeated you three times, and that was a contest. Whoever wins three out of three, now you have to carry me on your shoulders. All right. So then you sit on God's shoulders and you walk, you go around. Say, okay, take me to the Yamuna. So he takes you to Yamuna. So this is inconceivable, but this is just an embellishment, a decoration, the further sweetness of Krishna. So tomorrow we'll discuss some more of these points about how all contradictions are harmonized in the form of the absolute truth manifested as Sri Krishna the Beautiful.